You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you for listening. You can be a part of this fine production, 855-752-4842. Appreciate you all tuning in. Big day today. In studio with me, Matt Rothschild. You may know him from the Progressive Magazine, from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Also an author, 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin. You find that one on Amazon. Matt, welcome. Thanks for joining me, man.
It's a bestseller.
Yeah, baby. Of course, just on the board, on the phones, 855-752-4842. A big show, breaking news. Jack Smith has new details on the charges against Trump. We'll get to that immediately. At 4:30, Charles Franklin from the Marquette Law School poll. That poll dropped today. We will dive into some of the numbers there. Also, 5:30, Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez going to catch up with her in this election season. So look forward to speaking with her. But let's get right into it, Matt. Didn't know this was going to happen. Oh, yeah, there was a debate yesterday, but that's old news now. We'll try to fill in some gaps if we need to on that when we can. But the ABCNews.com is reporting bombshell immunity filing details Trump's alleged increasingly desperate bid to overturn the 2020 election. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Special Counsel Jack Smith outlined new details of former President Donald Trump and his allies sweeping and increasingly desperate efforts to overturn the 2020 loss in a blockbuster court filing Wednesday aimed at defending Smith's prosecution of Trump following the Supreme Court's July immunity ruling. Now, Trump intentionally lied to the public, state election officials, and his own vice president in an effort to cling to power after losing the election while privately describing some of the claims of election fraud as crazy, prosecutors allege in the 165-page filing. One more paragraph here. When the defendant, a quote from the piece, when the defendant lost the 2020 presidential election, he resorted to crimes to try to stay in office. With private co-conspirators, the defendant launched a series of increasingly desperate plans to overturn the legitimate election results in seven states he had lost. As mentioned, 165 pages in this filing dropped an hour or two ago. And Matt, you ran through that whole thing, man.
Got my skimmer going. Yeah. And let me just try to boil it down, because there's a lot of legal arguments in here. But basically, what Jack Smith said was, despite the Supreme Court's ruling on immunity, we still got this guy.
Yeah.
And that ruling shouldn't get in the way at all of us dragging his behind into court. And so the judge should proceed with the trial of Donald Trump. But let me get into the legal arguments after that rather crude summary. So now I am quoting from Jack Smith. Although the defendant was the incumbent president during the charged conspiracies, his scheme was fundamentally a private one. Working with a team of private co-conspirators, the defendant acted as a candidate when he pursued multiple criminal means to disrupt through fraud and deceit the government function by which votes are collected and counted, a function in which the defendant as president had no official role.
Uh-oh.
And let me go on if you don't mind.
None
of the defendant's charged conduct is immunized because it either was unofficial or any presumptive immunity, which relates to Pence, is rebutted. They said, and Jack Smith continued, he requests the relief the government seeks, which is at bottom, that the court determine that the defendant must stand trial for his private crimes, as would any other citizen.
Woohoo!
There you go.
Shocking. Go, man.
Go at him, Jack.
A little bit here. I'll jump in here. Matt, noting nothing the government intends to present to the jury is protected by presidential immunity. Although the defendant's discussions with the vice president about, quote unquote, their official responsibilities qualify as official, the government rebuts the presumption of immunity and all of the defendant's remaining conduct was unofficial. as content form and context show. The defendant was acting in his capacity as a candidate for re-election, not in his capacity as president. In the alternative, if any of his conduct were deemed official, the government could rebut the presumption of immunity.
And let me continue here from Jack Smith. The through line of these efforts was deceit. The defendants and co-conspirators knowingly false claims of election fraud. They used these lies in furtherance of three conspiracies. One, a conspiracy to interfere with the federal government function by which the nation collects and counts election results, which is set forth in the Constitution and the Electoral Count Act. Two, a conspiracy to obstruct the official proceeding in which Congress certifies the legitimate results. And three, a conspiracy against the rights of millions of Americans to vote and have their votes counted. That is dramatic. At its core, the defendant scheme was a private criminal effort.
The defendant used deceit to target every stage of the electoral process. They get into the false electors, and you can find this on the internet. I found it at, I think Axios had a nice link to the PDF, 160 some pages. You can get through it fairly quickly. And Wisconsin, I did a little, you know, some word searching, you know, like Jim Troupas and Ron Johnson. Well, of course, they blocked off some of those. They say, you know, CC1, co-conspirator 1, co-conspirator 2, P1, P2, I'm assuming person 1, person 2.
They refer to Troopers, they refer to Ron Johnson, but not by name.
And Rudy Giuliani, but you have to infer based on, you know, the context and the other words in those paragraphs and what we know to be in the public realm. But, you can't do the name search. But the state of Wisconsin mentioned 10 times. More details here, the breakdown by Matt Rothschild in the studio with me. The false electors, as president, the defendant had no official responsibilities related to the state's administration of the election or the appointment of their electors, and instead contacted state officials in his capacity as a candidate.
Not president.
President. Well, and just to stop right there, and I think this is obviously a big one. You know, the executive branch is not involved in this. He, as a president, is not involved in the counting of the ballots and in the election process. That is out of his realm. I mean, that's it. Period.
Right.
Full stop. Now, he is involved, I guess, as a candidate in the personal capacity, but even then, he doesn't have the ability to dictate terms to the locals.
He doesn't have the ability to call the Georgia Secretary of State and give me those 11,874 votes.
Right. Tellingly, the defendant contacted only state officials who were in his political party and were his political supporters, and only in states he had lost. You know, again, it's almost like this was a plan, like it was a conspiracy. Like he looked at these states that he lost and got a hold of his political buddies there. He didn't get a hold of the Democrats. He didn't get a hold of the Democratic governors or any of those sites and say, hey, the election was stolen. No, he called his lackeys, the folks that he thought would do his bidding for furtherance of this crime in a personal capacity as a candidate, not as a president in an official capacity. Again, telling the defendant contacted only state officials who were in his political party and were his political supporters and only in states he had lost. The defendant's attempts to use deceit to target the state's electoral process played out in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
Ding, ding, ding.
There's one of 10, as well as across these other states that had used certain voting machines.
One of the things I learned by just skimming this document was that Trump had sent out this tweet condemning Hagedorn. This is Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Brian Hagedorn, a conservative who sided with the liberals in a very important and courageous 4-3 majority opinion that he wrote, Hagedorn, saying that we're not going to overturn the election and throw out hundreds of thousands of votes like his conservative, so-called conservative
and his
justices wanted him
and his
to
objection
do.
was pretty strong. I mean, yeah. I mean, the remedy that they're asking for is to throw out hundreds of thousands of votes. That's not a remedy.
He said it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it would send us down a terrible road, he said. And he also said they were too late with their complaints. So he had a procedural and a substantive argument for throwing the Trump case into the garbage can, which he did. So Trump sent out a tweet saying, what's with this guy? I supported him. He was way behind in his campaign until I supported him. And then he said, Trump said, we won Wisconsin in a landslide. If it wasn't for this justice, we would be the winner in Wisconsin. And after that tweet went out, evidently there were Trump supporters who were so enraged at Hagedorn that Hagedorn had to get additional police protection.
Wow.
It says here.
From the Republican supporters. Interesting. You know, when your own political party hacks come after you, man, maybe you're in the wrong political party.
Yeah, I've been wondering when Hagedorn's going to rip up his Republican Party ID. But Jack Smith said the tweet by Trump after this decision, the tweet attacking Hagedorn, was, quote, partisan, personal, and unofficial.
Partisan, personal, and unofficial. Seems like it's very personal, partisan, and unofficial. A little more from the breakdown of the Jack Smith filing that was released today. At its core, the defendant's scheme was a private one. He extensively used private actors and his campaign infrastructure to attempt to overturn the election results and operated in a private capacity as a candidate for office. And these, again, very true, very important, very specific facts. What really still bothers me, this whole like Department of Justice thing. I mean, he did these things in the private capacity, but he also used his office, his official presidential office, to try to overturn the election as well. I mean, he engaged with the Department of Justice. We had that Jeffrey Clark character said, "Oh, I'll do it.
Sign me up. I'm an environmental lawyer, but let me take hold of this thing."
And under threat of mass resignation, only then did Trump back down. I mean, he had this, Jeffrey Clark had this letter ready to go out, wanted people to sign it. "Hey, we found all this fraud." "No, we didn't really find it, but just say we did and leave the rest to us."
And the U.S. Supreme Court says any president can do that from here on out.
And that's okay. That's okay. And that is very, very concerning.
So Jack Smith took all that stuff out.
He took it all out.
Thing.
And I know it's not in here, but let's remember it wasn't just Donald Trump in his personal capacity. He was also using the weight and force of the federal government as he could, which is extremely dangerous.
Yeah. This is quite an incredible document that Jack Smith has submitted. I encourage people to read it for yourselves. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the argument on Pence, because the Supreme Court seemed to shield Pence. And they take the shield away, Jack Smith does.
Folks, you are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Breaking news, big, big day today. Appreciate you tuning in, 855-752-4842. Matt Rothschild in the studio with me, Jess, on the lines, on the horn. At the bottom of the hour, we have Charles Franklin, the director of Marquette Law School poll. That dropped today as well. We'll get into some of that detail. And later on at 5:30, the lieutenant governor of the great state of Wisconsin, Sarah Rodriguez, will join us as well. You be a part of this fine production, 855-75-CIVIC. Join us. The Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Matt Rothschild in studio with me, Jess, on the lines. The breaking news, a 160-page filing released today. Jack Smith's efforts to prosecute Donald Trump, showing that this was personal and not official. We're going to dive into that. As mentioned, Charles Franklin, director of Marquette Law School poll, coming the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, Jack Smith went to great pains to go after Trump one way or another, but especially for his trying to get Pence, squeezing Pence, to try to throw out the legitimate votes at the Electoral College. Jack Smith writes, "The executive branch has no authority or function to choose the next president." So this is Jack Smith arguing that this wasn't the official capacity. Trump wasn't acting in his official capacity when he was talking to Pence to tell Pence to do the wrong thing. Jack Smith goes on, "The framers designed a system of separated powers in part to ensure that no man's allowed to be a judge in his own cause, because his interest would certainly bias his judgment and not improbably corrupt his integrity. There they're quoting from Federalist Papers number 10. And Jack Smith goes on, the defendant's charged conduct, that is Trump's conduct directly contravenes these foundational principles. He sought to encroach on powers specifically assigned by the Constitution to other branches in order to advance his own self-interest and perpetuate himself in power contrary to the will of the people. As such, applying a criminal prohibition to the defendant's conduct would not pose any danger of intrusion on the authority and functions of the executive branch. The vice president's role as president of the Senate is highly circumscribed and ministerial in nature. The 12th Amendment gives the president of the Senate no substantive role in determining how to count the votes of the electors appointed by the states. Rather, it provides only that he, quote, shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, unquote, and then shifts to the passive voice, and the votes shall then be counted, unquote. Nothing in the Constitution, Jack Smith goes on, remotely suggests that the single individual serving as president of the Senate would have the momentous responsibility to decide which votes to count and how they should be counted.
Oh, but Kenneth Cheeseborough, man, Jim Troopas, these guys got different plans. They read into it. They looked at the landscape. They read the Constitution. These are knowledgeable attorneys, Matt. And they determined that, yes, in fact, there was. You can do it. Trust me.
You know, you've heard of creative accounting. That was creative lawyering.
Yeah, no doubt. And very consequential, certainly for the country and perhaps for Donald Trump. The lies about Wisconsin's tally. Ooh, I mentioned Wisconsin mentioned in this unsealed filing, 165 pages long. Wisconsin is mentioned 10 times. Here's some of the quotes. Hundreds of illegal drop boxes were used in Wisconsin. Over 90,000 ballots were illegally harvested. Can't do that. Not allowed. Through so-called human drop boxes, and over 500 illegal unmanned drop boxes were put out statewide. At the Ellipse, he said that. In Wisconsin, corrupt Democrat-run cities deployed more than 500 illegal unmanned unsecured drop boxes, which collected a minimum of 91,000 unlawful votes.
I just don't know where he's grabbing these numbers.
I mean, but
this is what he did.
And
he
we're just still dealing with drop box issues here in the state of Wisconsin. The mayor of Wausau was out there screwing around with that. I mean, this is 4 years ago, yeah, man. You wonder where that comes from.
Yeah, the propaganda gets a life of its own, doesn't it?
It sure does. That Trump goes on to say, 170,000 invalid absentee votes were counted. Over 170,000 absentee votes were counted that are blatantly illegal under Wisconsin law, should never have been included in the tally. Over 170,000 absentee without a valid absentee ballot application. So they had a vote, but they had no application. And that's illegal in Wisconsin. Again, this is what Donald Trump was saying.
And Jack Smith points out what he was saying was totally false. And it was part of his fraud.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So at the very conclusion, if you're like me, you just sometimes like to read the beginning and read the end. You can jump to the conclusion on page 163 and 164 and 165. I'll read it to you, though. And it's a little legalistic. But basically, it says, we're bringing him to court. We're bringing him to trial. Judge, you got to do that. Based on a fact-bound analysis, for the reasons explained above, the court should determine that the conduct described in the factual proffer of Section 1, in the argument here, is not subject to presidential immunity. As part of this determination, the court should specify four determinations. First, that the government has rebutted the presumption of immunity attached to the defendant's official communications with the vice president. Second, that the remaining conduct described was not official. And in the alternative, that the government has rebutted any presumptive immunity. The government requests alternative rulings regarding rebuttal for all conduct the court finds to be unofficial to buttress the court's record, ensure thorough and efficient appellate review, and minimize the risk of successive rounds of appeals. Furthermore, based on the determination that all of the conduct here described is not immune from prosecution, and encompasses all the allegations in the superseding indictment, the court should further specify, three, that the defendant is subject to trial, and four, that the government is not prohibited at trial from using evidence of the conduct we described here. Respectfully submitted, Jack Smith, special counsel.
165 pages of respectful submittal. There is more to get to, but we do have a guest coming. We want to keep him up as well. Charles Franklin, Director of Market at Law School, Paul Cumming. But Mark, we'll squeeze you in on this topic. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Yeah, thanks. And you've been singing my song right along right now. The only duty that Donald Trump had officially in this whole thing, or Mike Pence or any of these people, is to uphold the Constitution. Because Donald Trump, when he takes the oath of office, one of his duties is to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. And if anything official is involved in that, that right there, he violated that. He violated his oath. I mean, it is just, I've been singing the song about the fake electors for quite some time now, and that any abridgment or denial of our right to vote, have that vote counted, is a violation. And for these Republican districts, maybe, I guess, under the 14th Amendment, I think it more applies to state actors rather than these individual.
Yeah, but Mark, I know you must have loved the part. They mentioned the Federalist Papers, and I know you love the Federalist Papers. Thanks for calling, man. This is a glorious day indeed. Hopefully, we'll actually see a trial one of these days. Folks, you are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Appreciate you tuning in. As mentioned, Charles Franklin, he's the director of the Marquette Law School polling. We got some numbers that came out today. We'll dive into some of those numbers. And again, take your calls, 855-75-CIVIC.
Things can get better.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Earl Ingram Jr. joining me in studio. You can check his show out on WAUK 8 to 10 a.m. Mondays through Fridays. Always a pleasure to have Earl hanging out with us. I threw this one out there before the break, and we get there because there's more to it. CNBC reporting, Tina Peters, a former Colorado Republican county clerk who espoused the false conspiracy theory that former President Donald Trump lost the 2020 election due to ballot fraud, was sentenced Thursday to 9 years in prison for crimes relating to a breach of her county's voting system. She got 9 years. 9 years for breaking into a voting system? And Donald Trump tried to overthrow the entirety of the election? And they were still waiting for trial on that. Let me just a little more here. Here's State District Court Judge Matthew Barrett told Peters, "You're no hero. You're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's proven to be junk time and time again. Your lies are well documented, and these convictions are serious. I'm convinced you'll do it all over again if you could," Barrett told the 68-year-old former Mesa County clerk.
68.
Who was accused of using another person's security badge to allow someone else to gain access to her county's election system. Now, this is what got me. You're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's been proven to be junk time and time again. Your lies are well documented. Now, he's saying that to Tina Peters, but he may as well be talking to Donald Trump. And we have some of that. Thank you, Aaron. Let's play a little bit of here. Let's go to... let's see, Donald Trump, we won cut number 12.
Last election, we did great in 2016. A lot of people don't know, we did much better in 2020. We won, we did win. It was a rigged election. You have to tell Kamala Harris, that's why I'm doing it again. If I thought I lost, I wouldn't be doing this again. You know where I'd be right now? On the beaches of Monte Carlo, maybe, or someplace.
You're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's been proven to be junk time and time again. That judge's words to Tina Peters could apply to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and Corey Lewandowski and the rest of these megas who continue to peddle that snake oil.
Let me ask you, Dominic, when you look at all of the people who he flummoxed into following him, who are in prison, that woman is 68 years old, man. She's got 9 years.
9 years.
And she did it because of Donald Trump. That would be, that woman would know. There's no way that woman would ever do something to break the law. 68 years old. But she was flummoxed into doing that. And now, what do you think, Donald Trump? You think he gives a second thought to her life being ruined? She allowed herself, like many others, like many of those on January 6th, to allow him to get into their spirits and their psyches and who they are. And they had no defense mechanisms for his charm.
You know, and I
well, that's what they say, man. What else is it? What else is it?
His charm. that's so gross.
I know.
it's they're grown ass adults, Earl. You know what I'm saying? 68 years old. I mean, that's what's really flummoxing to me is that these are intelligent, presumably. They work. I mean, you know, she working in,
career,
in these
yeah,
right working in these right. jobs. You know, I mean, this is not something that people had no idea they could have done. They should have had some critical thinking skills and looked at this in more. Maybe they were just being told what they wanted to hear. And if that's your motivation, well, they told me that, so I'm assuming Donald Trump told me the election was stolen, so I had to go, you know, get on the case and crack the case myself and use a security badge, let somebody else access voting systems. You're not going to crack the case. And Donald Trump's been lying to you the whole time. And as a grown adult, if you are not capable or are not willing, which I think is more the case, certainly capable, but not willing to think about this in real terms and look at the history of what Donald Trump has said and look at the filings of the court cases and look at how he was already in the winter before the election laying the groundwork for it's going to be a rigged election. And because, of course, during the pandemic, lots of folks wanted absentee ballots because they didn't want to go sit in line to cast their vote. A lot of folks grabbed those absentee ballots. A lot of folks used drop boxes so they didn't have to get exposed to COVID. You know what I'm saying? Remember Assembly Speaker Robin Voss? He was all decked out in his PPE ear gear. He's like, yeah, it's totally safe to come down to vote. It's like, what, dude? That was the environment in which we were in. And the people weren't voting that way because they wanted to, you know, vote illegally. They were voting that way because they didn't want to get sick and die.
So the MyPillow guy is a prime example. He had a $200 million business. Dominic, he's broke. So he gave all of that up for what? To be next to Donald Trump? If he had it to do all over, I mean, he's still talking crazy. He's still, I know, man. He lost all of that.
Yeah.
And yet he's still supporting Trump. So, you know, PJ said, you know, Trump brainwashed the people. But, you know, I can understand somebody of eloquence, Dominic, brainwashing people, right? Somebody really bright. But yeah. If Donald Trump is able to brainwash you, we've got to question whether or not you even had a brain. Right.
And that's what I'm saying. In normal cases, I mean, the guy like Lindell, you know, made lots of money. Doesn't mean he's smart necessarily,
right.
But he was successful, you know, and so presumably he had some wherewithal to use of his own psyche to make that success happen. Right. But then he just give it all away. I think that is the wake of disaster that follows Donald Trump. I mean, who has been around Donald Trump? Can you think of in his political circles or in his business circles or, you know, in any of his golf courses, you know, break the businesses down and have come out better at the end of it?
Well, very
besides
few.
Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump usually ends up okay. But everybody else gets the shaft.
Well, very few, man. His family was left there, and all the other people have fallen by the wayside, historically.
Yeah. 855-752-4842. Matt from Middleton, you are next. Welcome, Matt. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to ask you, because I've talked to a couple of Trump people, and there always seems to be this like anger and angst against the system, whatever it is, and working hard, not having much to show for it, and this extreme pessimism.
Yeah.
Where they say all politicians lie, they're all the same, which clearly is not true. So once we get past Trump and he's gone, do you think it's possible to like try to repair some of that, or do you think people just inherently are going to feel that way, regardless of the evidence? You know.
I mean, you know, I think Matt, a lot of folks look at these issues through their own personal lens. You know, because when we talk about the economy was this versus that, you know, those are macroeconomic numbers, and you can look at GDP and interest rates and CPI and unemployment rates and breakdown and look at a statistical analysis. What was it then? What is it now? And how do you gauge that? And everyone, you know, looks at that through their own personal perspectives, I think. And as far as, and I think a lot of folks are inherently suspicious of the quote unquote system, in part because they're not engaged in it. And engaging in self-governance, we the people, this is not some, deep state thing. This is literally us, we the people. And voting is obviously a big part of that. But engagement is not just going to a Donald Trump rally, like it's a monster truck rally or an all-star wrestling competition, and being entertained with the vitriol and the insults and the lies. I mean, that's a thing, but that's not necessarily engaging. And I think guys like Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are doing such a huge disservice to all those folks who are questioning our self-governance. Because when you question government, you're questioning ourselves, we the people. And if you have those concerns, yes, certainly get involved. But do more than just listen and believe what a guy like Donald Trump says. You know, look at their track record. Look at the people they hang out with. You know, how do you judge anybody? Donald Trump would not be able to get away with this in a bar, in a restaurant, in a normal work setting. Donald Trump would not be around. If he was not rich, Donald Trump would not be in this circumstance. He gets a pass because he's rich, and he uses that money to further his lies. I mean, how many hundreds of millions of dollars has he spent on his legal fees? No, he hasn't spent it necessarily.
Other people.
His other people. OPM, man. You know, he's totally fine with that. So I get the pessimism, but I'm a pessimistic guy. You know, I mean, I voted third party before. I voted all over the place. But what I've come to realize in my own personal opinion, because we take these personally, is that the answer then, the solution to that is engagement. And it's also being recognizing what the reality is. And if you think, billionaires are going to be helping working folks, no. I don't buy it. I don't think there's any malevolent billionaires out there. That's why they're billionaires. If they were, they wouldn't hoard the billions. You know what I'm saying? So, but that aside, what are the policies? I mean, the Affordable Care Act. Donald Trump tried to kill the Affordable Care Act. Although Vance said, he saved it. Well, that wasn't the case. Pre-existing condition. Donald Trump, well, if you get rid of the ACA, you get rid of pre-existing condition coverage. Well, Vance said during the debate, no, well, of course, we'll have pre-existing exceptions for pre-existing conditions. Based on what? They just say it, but it's not the case. And if that's the case, then a lot of folks are going to get kicked off, and you have to go to those high-risk pools. It's going to cost you more. The tariffs raise prices for consumers. They're not paid for by China. They're paid for by the business, and they're paid for by you if you buy those products because they're more expensive. And you can go up and down the list. The whole immigration thing is really where I think he has the strength, quote-unquote, because he's good at pitting the people against each other. And that's exactly what that is. Like back in the day, it was the poor white person versus, the poor black person. Well, at least you're not the poor black person. And that this continues to this day. You hear Donald Trump today, Earl, talking in Michigan about Ohio again, about the immigrants. He's talking about taking away their temporary protected status just because.
It's all he has. And so, it's a great point that he brought up. What happens? At some point in time, the election is going to end, and the damage that has been done to this nation, Dominic, is akin to a war. How are the American people ever going to be able to come back? Fellow countrymen right now hate one another. hate. Why? One guy has been able to turn the American people into hating each other, predicated on whether or not you believe in Donald Trump or you want Kamala Harris. And as crazy as that sounds, we're there. How do you fix it? He's right. How do you fix it?
I think it's got to be engagement. It's got to be engagement. And if you look at the policies, at least that we've talked about with Harris, you're talking about you're putting money in people's pockets for their kids, for a downstroke on a house, if you're a first-generational home buyer.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things, that's real money. That's real impact. And that can help. And we need more of those kinds of policies and less of the corporate giveaways and the billionaire giveaways. And I just think I don't think it's that difficult. If you're going to vote for an ideology, aren't you going to vote for the thing that's going to help you? Aren't you going to be self-interested in that vote? Now, you're going to have some folks that maybe are the racists and don't want anybody else coming to this country. You're going to have some folks that are just, you know, dead set against abortion in all circumstances and all cases. But as a general rule, I think those that are just starting to or have that the concern about our self-governance is engagement. Get them in. Come into the crew. Come be a part of this. And let's work towards solutions that actually solve the problems that you're very concerned about, and perhaps rightfully so. But that guy, he's got a concept of a plan to help you as he picks your pocket. 855-752-4842. Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now on the lines of talk or text. 855-752-4842. Texts are from the WMDX. Says, will CJ apologize for lying? Well, maybe he just didn't understand the deets. So let me throw a little bit of the deets out for you. According to the Washington Post, the Trump campaign and allies, the former president, are distorting official Homeland Security statistics on undocumented immigrants with criminal records, claiming thousands of those migrants have come during the Biden administration when, in reality, the numbers that they're citing span decades. Decades. That's multiple. In fact, 40. The data was released by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement to Congress last week shows there are 13,099 immigrants with homicide convictions who are not currently jailed by ICE. Again, that's a very specific statement. Not currently jailed by ICE. Now, on Sunday in particular, Republican lawmakers seized on the data to criticize Dems, of course, specifically Harris, whom former President Trump has tried to portray as weak on the border as the election approaches. Trump and his allies claim that the 13,000-plus immigrants cited by ICE in a letter were released by Democrats and are at large, posing danger to U.S. citizens. But as the Washington Post notes, Republicans are misrepresenting the ICE data, DHS spokesperson said in a statement on Sunday. Now, the 13,099 immigrants with murder convictions cited by Trump and his allies are part of ICE's non-detained, quote-unquote, non-detained docket. Now, that's a list of nearly 7 million people who have pending immigration cases before the agency, but who are not jailed by ICE for various reasons, such as because they are currently incarcerated by federal, state, or local authorities. Oh, so if they're not by ICE, maybe they're in the federal, state, or local authorities. I don't know. Maybe. Or because they've already served their criminal sentences but have not yet been deported. Now, immigrants living in the United States illegally who commit crimes and go to prison are typically transferred to ICE custody once they complete their sentences here. Now, ICE may try to immediately deport them to their home countries, but some have pending immigration cases and receive permission to remain in the U.S. while their claims are resolved. Now, an immigrant who commits a homicide at the age of 20 and completes a lengthy U.S. prison term could be allowed to remain in the United States upon release if a judge allows it, for example, because the person has a U.S.-born children or other reasons. Now, the vast majority of the homicide convictions are not individuals who came into the country during the Biden administration. Oh, what? Let me repeat that in case you're slow. The vast majority of homicide convictions are not individuals who came into the country during the Biden administration. They are immigrants who've been added to ICE's records over the past 40 years. Many of those on the list were added during the Trump administration. The data goes back decades and includes individuals who entered the country over the past 40 years or more, the vast majority of whose custody determination was made long before this administration. Now, the data first started circulating after ICE Director P.J. Lechleitner, sent a letter on Wednesday replying to requests from Rep. Tony Gonzalez, a Republican from Texas. Well, of course, it doesn't matter whether or not the stats are accurate or whatnot. I mean, even if the stats, I believe what the stats are. Now, how you interpret the stats and what you think the stats mean and who's to blame for it, well, you got to dig in a little bit. But if you see a headline saying 13,000 convicted murderers, oh my God, it's all Harris and Biden's fault. Well, if you don't read behind the headline of, you know, Foxy or Newsy or whatever you get your news from, you know, maybe you'd be calling up radio shows like the guy did on Friday and say that same bunk to me. Now, the number of cases on ICE's non-detained docket nearly doubled during the Biden presidency when illegal border crossings reached record highs between 2021 and 2023. The data in the letter shows that as of July 21, there were about 660,000 non-citizens with criminal histories on ICE's national docket. Of those who are not being held by ICE, 425,000 are convicted criminals. Now, the data reported in the letter represents immigrants recorded over the past four decades, as mentioned, though the letter doesn't specify when the record officially began. Now, an analyst with the American Immigration Council, Aaron Reichlin Melnick, noted that the number has gone up by 15% since 2015. Also noted that the docket has been here for decades and can't be deported often for diplomatic reasons. Now, this was interesting. Anyone on ICE's non-detained docket with a homicide conviction has likely been in the country for decades, served a full criminal sentence, and cannot be removed because they're from a country which restricts U.S. deportations. Well, isn't that a quirk? There are others on ICE's non-detained docket who have serious criminal records who, after serving their time, managed to win some form of protection, really from removal. They're now here legally, but remain on the docket and are required to check in with ICE periodically. There's no evidence that undocumented immigrants commit violent crimes at higher rates than U.S. citizens. In fact, I think there's probably trending that would suggest that's not the case. But I digress. Over the weekend, Trump and his allies cited none of these details. Oh, no. Oh, no. None of those details, because it goes against what they're saying, right? Including what Trump had done with the migrant backlog during his term in office. Instead, during a rally on Sunday in the swing state of Wisco, maybe we played some of that sound earlier, several enlarged posters with immigrants of migrants in orange jumpsuits were used as a stage backdrop. Trump falsely alleged that 13,000 convicted murderers have crossed the border and are free to roam and kill in our country under the Biden administration. On Sunday, he again cited the distorted statistics during a rally in Erie, Pennsylvania. And earlier the same day, Senator Cotton, a Republican, repeated the same false claim on CBS's Face the Nation, quoting, quote him, "The Biden administration just acknowledged that they released more than 13,000 convicted murderers who entered the illegally entered this country." Now, of course, Cotton's not a dumb guy. I'm not going to talk about Donald Trump. They're saying this specifically and purposefully. So you mega faithful go out and believe this. And it's not true. They're not coming. They're not eating the pets. They're not eating the dog. They're not eating the cats of the people that live there. People, do better. This is the Dom Salvia Show. You always do better when you tune in to me. Coming up next, Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Tomorrow, Josh Call. And we'll preview the VP debate with Walls and Pence. And Vance Pence. Thanks for listening.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.